Hello, this is Detective David Love.
This is Dr. Lana Love, and this is Universal Soul Love Radio. Lovely to have you here today.
We're broadcasting from Land Down Under on the BBS Radio Network. Glad to have you with us.
My background is I'm a doctor specializing in emotional health. I'm an animal advocate, a humanitarian, and a Buddhist.
I'm a career private investigator, a mystic author, hypnotherapist. I do a number of other things.
And Universal Soul Love Radio is meant to bring a message of universal love to the world. We have a variety of topics that we cover that are very important, including the state of the world, which does include politics, including environmental advocacy, including promoting healthy gender relationships between men and women, the sacred feminine and masculine, and our aim is to raise the consciousness of the planet. So, of course,
and don't forget the exploring the hidden mysteries of the universe.
Oh, of course, yes. So, we aim to bring peace and universal love to the world.
And today, our very special guest is Senator Michael Brown of D.C. Very pleased to have Michael on our show with us today.
Well, I'm pleased to be here, guys. I've been on the show before, and I think that you're both lovely people that are trying to make a better world. And so I'm honored to be part of it.
Well, thank you, Senator. And for those people outside of America, just to let you know that Washington, D.C. is actually not one of the states of America because it's the capital of America. And therefore, as a shadow senator, the people in D.C., I believe, do not have voting rights, which is a bit weird. And so, of course, you need to advocate for the people of D.C.
Yeah, so that's right.
So it's a very special presence that you have.
Very important position, actually. You're sort of representing the rights of people who don't have a vote.
Exactly. 700,000 people, and we don't have a vote in our own national legislatures, which in Congress at all. And it was only in the 1960s that we got the right to even vote for president. So now we get to vote for president. But we don't have any other say in our national government at all, and it's very strange. Not many places do this in the world. We're one of the only democracies that does this.
Yeah, certainly a curiosity for Australians, but there you go. But I do believe that you have a very important role then to promote local politics, but also in international politics. I believe you're about to go to Portugal to talk about the American dream. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it's an amazing conference. It's an organization called Horacis, and what they do is they try to bring leaders from all over the world in business and politics and social issues together in an international conference to exchange ideas and talk and socialize with each other in an effort to make the world a little smaller and connect us a little more and let each of us, let different people working in different environments, tap into the mindset of others around the world that are doing similar things. So it's a great, great idea, and I'm anxious to go and very honored to be there. I will appear on a panel with a Maryland from the state of Maryland state senator, and we're going to talk about the American dream. And that's something that people wonder about these days, because the American dream used to be very, very straightforward. It was an idea that you could be free and you could do what you wanted, and through your hard work and effort, you could become whatever you wanted. So it was about liberty. It was about freedom. It was about making a better life for yourself, and much more importantly, making a better life for your children. But now, you know, there are a lot of issues out there because the country's divided, and we have issues like the Dreamers. I'm not sure if your listeners in Australia would know what Dreamers are, but Dreamers are children that were brought to the United States illegally by their parents. But they've lived here and they've grown up here, and now there's a fight over whether we should make them leave because they didn't come in legally. And that's kind of a new phenomenon in America that we're having this debate. Yeah. And you know, these are people that came, but they didn't come of their own accord. You know, they were brought as children. So their parents may be illegal immigrants, but there was a law passed by President Obama. We call it DACA. That's the acronym. And it allows them to stay and work on a path to citizenship. And, you know, many of us believe that's the right thing to do, but then there's opposition too, because the country splits straight down the middle these days. So the American dream has become somewhat complicated. I think it's still the same, but the way you get there is different. And some of the roadblocks that we now come across are seem to be different. And we're very much split in America, straight down the middle.
Yeah, I've been in Australia for 4 years now, and I've been watching what's been going on in America since I left, and especially even since the last time you were on our show as a guest. Things have been insane, and all Australians have been watching this. I don't want to say all of them, but people have been watching with interest and just trying to figure out what's going on over there. Lots of crazy stuff happening, and that's one of the reasons we brought you on our show, is we want to get some insight into what's happening in the White House and in Congress and in the world with the changing geopolitical landscape and the shifting global order with Syria and just domestically and internationally. Everything seems to be topsy-turvy right now, and nobody can seem to really make sense of what's going on with all the headlines that are flying around every day.
Well, I think there's certainly being a I think there's certainly a cultural shift going on in the entire world. You know, when we see people shifting positions, right? Look at how strong China has become as an economic power. You know, in the United States, at the end of the Second World War, the United States economy and military were stronger than the next 10 countries combined. So imagine that. We were 10 times stronger than any other country in the world in terms of our economic might and in terms of our military power. We dictated foreign policy to the world in a lot of ways. Also, we had very strong alliances in Europe and elsewhere around the world. So we were aligned with the strongest economic and military powers in the world. That's not true anymore. And that's, I think we're going through a serious adjustment period over that.
Absolutely. And that's certainly one of the concerns of many Australians here, is China with the Spratly Islands, and they've been, their warships have been, the Australian Defense Force has been confronted by China. What are you doing here in the South China Sea? And China spreading out, putting the military bases in other countries and flexing their muscle and that sort of thing. And we've heard recently that some Australians believe that the the U.S. Navy should be ported in Perth to defend against the Chinese military expansion. So there's all sorts of worries, I guess you could say, here about what's been happening.
Yeah, the balance certainly has shifted. You know, America used to be seen as the strongest and as a protector, certainly with Australia. And now, you know, America's got its economic problems. China has emerged, and Russia as new superpowers. The American dollar has gone down. Things are very different.
And we're in a difficult position where China is probably Australia's biggest economic trading partner, and the U.S. as well economically. So we're in a precarious situation here in our relationship with the U.S. and China.
Well, I would just say first, to put the mind of Australians at ease, our military is getting stronger. It's not getting weaker. So we're in a good military. We're in a good position militarily. We also love Australia. You know, America is an ally that I believe Australia can always count on. We've always had a good relationship with your country, and I think that most Americans think very highly of Australians and think that they are our friends. I think you have a good ally in America, as you always have, and I think our military is strong. We shouldn't. You know, you're right about the economic conditions. You're right about the political upheaval. But militarily, we're still the country to be reckoned with, I think. So I think we're very strong. Now, how we use that is another question. And I know that you want to talk about Syria, and Syria is a very good example. It's an example of the turmoil, right? Because we have a president who has said that we should get out of there, and then a few weeks later is bombing Syria. So, there's turmoil, but I think that you should take from this several things. One being that we're still determined to stand up for the what we think are the important issues in the world, what we feel are human rights issues, for example, like the poisoning of his own citizens. You know, we're willing to take action on that regardless of what the other situation is about, you know, the idea of withdrawing troops. So I think that's something positive you should take away from this. What the future policy will be because of the turmoil, I just don't know. I don't know. And I think that the fact that we went in with a multilateral force into Syria is also a positive thing. We're not acting alone on this. Look, I'm not a big fan of the president's, but I think what he did in Syria, the military and the White House, and I think Congress would back it up too, that needed to be done.
Okay. What do you think is going on in Syria? I mean, is this going to develop into, is going to escalate? Do you feel it might escalate into something much bigger? I mean, when Trump tweeted, watch out, Russians, the missiles are coming at you. I mean, that was scary. You know, that was, we felt like this could be a potential World War III conflict developing in Syria without knowing that that the military had collaborated a bit with Russia in a certain way so that the Russians would not get hit by these missiles, which was a great thing. But a lot of the things that happen that have happened are quite frightening in a lot of ways to people, not knowing Trump's behaviors all the time. It can be quite unpredictable.
Well, he scares the hell out of Americans. I mean, you know, that's just the truth about it. And you know, there are a lot of Americans that are afraid of his behavior because it's erratic. And you guys know that's not part of leadership. You know, leaders are supposed to be strong and steady and straightforward and right and lead you in a particular direction. This guy can go all over the place, so you never know what's going on. But understand about America that we really do have a system of government of checks and balances. So we're not going to get into a war with the Soviet Union.
I mean, no, I wouldn't think so. That's insane.
Yeah, it would be insane. And there would be a lot of the, regardless of what the president, for example, might tweet out, there's a whole military industrial complex and Congress and a legal system that was, you know, is there to inhibit any kind of reckless behavior. So I don't think that that's going to happen, but I think that he wants to be strong. You know, politically, you have to understand that this man is under a lot of pressure because there's all sorts of speculation that he's colluded with the Russians. So some of this talk, I think, is just to say, hey, look, I'm not Putin's pal. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think he's taken a lot of criticism. You know, we still have the Russian probe going on.
Right.
And we don't know what's going to happen at the end of that. But we've seen a lot of movement lately with his rhetoric about firing the special counsel, Robert Mueller, and you know, some of the other things, that this is a witch hunt and we should stop it. This is very sensitive with him, and he's taking criticism for being too cozy with Putin.
Yep, there's certainly a lot going on, and it's really hard to, like you said, he looks like he's Putin's pal, and at the same time he's going up against the Russians, and I don't know, it's hard to really determine exactly what's happening just from the headlines and from what's being said, because we only know what we're being told. So And it's hard to decipher fact from fiction when you're reading anything on the internet or any news headlines. So I take everything I see with a grain of salt anyhow.
Well, you know, now with the 24-hour news cycle, now I don't know what it's like in Australia, but I'm sure it's similar in a lot of ways. But here, you know, we've got 6 or 8 channels that are on the air 24 hours a day, and then we have the internet, and we have, you know, other news sources, and these people have to generate stories, you know, so they take every little facet of every little thing and they blow it up as much as they can, and it's hard, it really is hard to decipher the truth sometimes. So what I do, I listen to conservative news and I listen to liberal news, and I try to figure out the commonality between the two to find the truth. You know?
Okay, the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Good idea.
Somewhere in the middle. It really is, right?
I agree. It is. That's right. I'm an investigator. I can agree with that wholeheartedly. You've got to take everything you get and just do process of elimination and try to get the relative truth out of any situation.
I guess something that our listeners are probably very concerned about, given that we are Universal Soul Love and we are for peace, is the fact that the citizens of Syria are getting killed. And it's of great concern. You know, we everyone wants...
It's a tragedy.
I believe that most citizens of the world want peace. And it breaks our hearts when we hear about bombings, missiles, because we know that that equates to people dying.
Right. And we wonder, you know, is dropping bombs on a country that's already being bombed by their own government, is that going to liberate them, or is that just going to kill more innocent people in the process? I mean, is there any way of really helping?
Because the average citizen, like myself and David, feels
helpless.
And we want to do something about it. We don't want a world of war. We don't want people across the globe dying.
We want people protected, but we don't want to make the situation, we don't want to see the situation get worse.
And I guess the average citizen wants their politicians to stop war and protect not just the citizens of their country, but the citizens around the world. Mm.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about that. But the only thing I would say is that there's really only one way to deal with a bully, and that is to stand up to the bully. And I believe that, you know, this is where we feel the Syrian government, when they started to poison people, that they were being, you know, that was an act of bullying, and we had to stand up to it. So, you know, they tried to, I think they tried to bomb facilities that they felt were manufacturing these chemical weapons. And that, you know, speaks to what you just said about people dying. I mean, I think there's always collateral damage, and we have to be grown up about it and say, you know, if you drop a bomb, you're going to kill somebody, and it's not the right thing to do. But, you know, when you think of the use of chemical weapons where you could literally wipe out millions of people, that this kind of behavior cannot be tolerated. And I don't know how you deal with it otherwise. You know, is there a diplomatic solution? Can you go in? Is the world willing to stand up together and condemn these people and cut off the government? And, you know, I don't know that they are.
Yeah,
so look, we're left with a limited amount of options.
I'm going to agree with you on that point. When you have a bully, you very often just have to stand up to that bully and say no and do whatever it takes to neutralize that threat. This situation gets quite complicated because we've got Turkey taking part of Syria, Russians heavily involved in backing the Syrian government. We've got Iran moving in, and we've got Israel upset about that. And there's hundreds of different rebel factions, it sounds like, and it gets very complicated. And the Syrian people themselves just get massacred in the process of all this controversy happening over there. And it's, I don't know what the good answer is to all of this.
I guess the other issue is that what we hear might not be what actually happens. We're told that there was a chemical attack. How true is that? We know some news is manufactured, others isn't. It's a very complex situation. It's for the average person. It's hard to know what to believe.
I mean, the Russians deny, and it's simple enough when Trump said he was going to pull our troops out for some rebel faction that wants the U.S. to stay in to set off a chemical attack just to keep the United States in. There's so many different variables or theories that we could come up with to explain these alleged chemical attacks.
Well, what I would say to that is that even though our president unfortunately relies on Fox News for his information, the CIA and the NSA do not. So I would think that we had pretty good intelligence about it. And don't forget that Syria is certainly in what we would consider, I think, internationally, the Russian sphere of influence. So we're always going to tread lightly if we can, I think, there. Mm-hmm. I don't think that military action was taken very lightly. And I think that's one of the reasons that it wasn't unilateral military action, that we involved allies in our attempt, is because we understand that this is a hotbed of dissent in the world for what's going on between the Palestinians and the Israelis right now. This goes back to the time of Jesus Christ.
This is
an area that we spend a lot of time studying from an intelligence standpoint, and I think that people, if people are worried about this setting off a major conflict in the Middle East, I think you can rest assured that that's not going to happen. That this was a limited attack. It was to send a message back to the person that was sending a message out, that he could do whatever he wanted with his own people. We sent a message back saying, no, you can't. There's a consequence to that.
No, you're right. At the time, it sounded scary when all we heard was Trump's tweets. But at the end of it, it sounded like it was pretty well orchestrated. And it sounds like the military or whoever got on the hotline with Russia and said, look, the coalition forces are going to bomb these chemical sites no matter what. So the Russians said, well, in that case, then here's where you can bomb and here's where you can't bomb without hitting Russian military assets. And it sounds like they worked that out fairly well.
Yeah,
so there was minimal damage and chances of conflict between the U.S. and Russia and its allies, at least. So,
but, you know, again, you know, when you're talking, look, this man that's in the White House now is just different. I've been in politics 40 years and I've never seen anything like this guy in Washington, right? He first of all, one of the things that I've done in my life is I've trained political candidates who want to run for public office. And we've been pretty successful at it. And we tell them, we give them a set of rules to follow, and Trump has broken every single one of them. We tell them, one of the first things we say to them is don't anger women. Women vote more than men in the United States. Don't get on the wrong side of the press. Don't say bad things about the press. This guy, the first two groups he pissed off were women and the press. And he still got elected, you know? So he's rewriting things in the way, you know, politics is going to proceed in America, I think. But the big problem now is there's this great division. And, you know, Trump's popularity rating has dropped to under 40%. It's somewhere between, I think, about 35% these days. And but 35% that are so strong in their support for him, you know, that's a third of America. So that's a significant number of people to have at your back. And nothing seems to dissuade them from supporting him. No matter what he tweets, no matter what he does, no matter what he says, they stand up for him. So that, I think, speaks to a deeper problem in America, which is that we have this, all of a sudden we're having this culture war, basically.
He certainly seems to make his own rules. I think that song written by Frank Sinatra was for him, "I Did It My Way."
I guess the fact that he's so popular does speak to the fact that there may be quite a lot of disillusionment with politics in the American society. And I guess, you know, he's trying to bring back the American dream. So,
well, he's convinced people that that's what you do. That's what he's trying to do. But look, a wall around America will kill the dream. He's not doing anything to really bring back the dream, and people see that. And what's happened is America has changed. I'm sure Australia's gone through the same thing. But America, you know, when I got out of college, I walked out of college, I put on a suit and tie, and I got a job. My daughter, who graduated at the top of her class, has three jobs in Chicago. And my son, who graduated at the top of his class, works in a hardware store. He's only been out of school, 6 months. But things have changed in America. Economically, they've changed. Also groups in America have expanded their rights, and things have happened quickly. So culturally, there's been this kind of traumatic shift in things like marriage equality and separation of church and state. And this has changed the way our society has worked. And this has come on quickly. And there's a court, you know, over the court. I mean, it's taken 30 or 40 years, but. For a lot of people, that cultural shift has frightened them and has caused them to withdraw. And those are the people that support Trump, I think. People that fear that, their job, their future is threatened because they don't have a job and their kids won't have jobs. People that worry that the culture is changing too quickly and they'll be left out somehow. So those are the people that I think are his core support.
Right. Well, he does seem to appeal to that segment of the population, and it's hard to sort of get your head around exactly what
what's happened. And you will be talking about the American dream. I wonder what you will be talking about. And I wonder whether the American dream is really the world's dream. Mm. I mean, really, America's dream is freedom, independence, the right perhaps to protect yourself. Does it have a world equivalent, a global equivalent? Is there a global dream?
Well, I think you're right. I think it is a global dream. And that's why I say a wall will kill the dream, because it's a dream that's come in from all over the world, right? This country was built by immigrants, masses of people that came from all over the world with the dream that you just talked about. That was their dream. And they came here, and in many cases, they realized that dream. At least the potential was here to realize that dream. So I think that is a universal dream. And I think that, the country was founded on a dream, right? When you think about it, when you look back at the foundation of America, it was a handful of people that had read a handful of books by people like Rousseau and Locke and Adam Smith and Hobbes and all these thinkers that said, no, power doesn't come from a king or a lord or somebody that's landed gentry. Power actually comes from the bottom up. It's actually something that's given you by God and is your right to express it any way you want within, reason, and that people need to come together to form governments, and that governments are actually nothing more than the formation of people. They within themselves have no power except that power which the people grant to them. That was a revolutionary idea. I mean, no pun intended, but that was, the world, this was as enlightened as thinking got in the world in those days. And so the country was founded on a dream.
And it seems like we've really gotten away from that in a big way.
Well, I don't know that we have, I mean, we certainly have in some ways, because there's conflict. One of the things that Lana just mentioned was that people in the United States have the right to protect themselves. I think that we agree on that, but we see 8 million assault rifles in private hands, and most Americans don't understand that. They don't understand. We've had all these mass killings and all these other things in America. And I think that this is something that has been really generated by a lobby group that is really just an industry lobby, and that's the National Rifle Association. They have really affected politics in America. So, there's some aberrations of the dream, and there's some complications to the dream, and there's some people that have interfered with the dream. But I think the basic dream is still there.
Well, I guess, conflict is sometimes a necessary part of the change. Conflict is a radical form of change, and sometimes it's very necessary in order to bring reform, possibly. Hopefully not conflict as in war, but as in people being able to voice their opinions to their leaders and enact positive change.
Well, and that's the beauty of democracy, right? So here I am in Washington, and right after the terrible murders in Parkland, Florida, which I'm sure you heard about, 800,000 kids showed up in Washington, D.C., almost a million kids in a matter of, I don't know how long it took, but within a couple of weeks, and they protested at the Capitol. And it was amazing. It was amazing to see these young people get up and speak their heart about how this is affecting them. And we heard from people like Martin Luther King's granddaughter, who couldn't have been more than 10 or 12 years old. And we heard from teenagers, more from teenagers than from anybody else, about how they're afraid in their own, in places where they're supposed to be safe. So that is really the most important thing in a democracy, and it's saving grace, is that people can come and petition the government like this. Now, will this make a difference? We'll have to wait and see. But yes, I think there's a movement afoot with young people, and they may be the ones that can make this happen.
Yeah, well, the right to free speech and the right to assembly and et cetera and the Bill of Rights is fundamental to government reform and just fairness and for the people. So,
but you have to use it, you know.
Yes.
And now these kids are using it. And, you know, if it's there and you don't use it, it's not doing a lot of good. But, yeah, and hopefully they'll bring America to its senses, because most of Americans believe in some kind of reasonable gun control. And they also believe in your right to own a gun. They don't want to take your gun away.
No, we've had this discussion with you before on the show.
Right.
And that was we've had a long discussion about that. And I'm, you know, I was a gun owner for more than 20 years in the U.S. Australia has very strict gun licensing and gun control laws. It works fairly well.
I guess as an Australian, I must say there is a very different attitude between Australians and Americans regarding gun control. We do have, you know, very different beginnings as a nation. Australia gun laws are much stricter, and I guess the majority of Australians would probably say it's best not to have a gun. If you don't have a gun, then you don't have any shots fired. Of course, criminals can get their criminals will always be able to get a handle on guns, but you know there are some pretty impressive statistics that will actually show that, you know, that the level of gun ownership is indirectly correlated with the level of, fatalities.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely. But, you know, one thing that's different, and I don't know how much different this is than Australia, but the fact that our country is made up of so many immigrants and so many ideas from all over the world, I think what you'd find here, Dr. Lana, is that in New York, you have an attitude that's very, very much the same as the attitude you just expressed in Australia. But in Kansas and Wyoming and Arizona and Virginia, you have a different attitude. So there's different, you know, and that complicates the situation, because
Absolutely.
Our legislature is made up of people from all over the country. So that complicates it. So whereas in Washington, D.C., for example, we have extremely tough gun laws. You cannot carry a gun in the District of Columbia unless you have a special permit, and you have to prove cause for having the gun. You can't just go in and get a permit. You need to explain why it's essential for you to have one. We used to have a law that was beaten down by the Supreme Court that all you could own was a shotgun. You couldn't even own a handgun in the District of Columbia. But, you know, oh my God, in Virginia or in Texas or in Florida, you can own any kind of gun you want.
That is actually really interesting. I think one of the big fundamental political and cultural differences between America and Australia, apart from the fact that in America you have so many more people, is that there's a much, you know, more, I guess, homogenous culture within Australia. And while separate states can have separate laws, the laws are much the same. In America, Beautiful. It's almost like you go to a different state, it's like a different country.
Can be, yeah, depending on the law, it can be.
And can I put you on the spot about D.C.?
Yeah.
Isn't there a lot of gun-related murders in D.C.?
Yes. And you know what? When we talk about gun control, for example, that's very often, you know, what people say. But having very loose gun laws in Virginia, it's really and not particularly tough gun laws in Maryland, it's really easy to get guns in and out of the district.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there is a lot of violence, and we've reduced it significantly, but yeah, there's still way too much of it. And what Lana said earlier is true. There's a simple statistic out there, which is the more guns you have, the more murder, the more death from guns you have. It's we certainly know that's true.
Yeah, I mean, we're going over a topic that we discussed before, but yeah. I went to college
it's
in Vermont.
It's a hot topic.
But I went to college in Vermont, and I don't believe there's any gun licensing laws there, and people generally don't murder each other there. Northern New England is, you know, it's rural. It's very different from a populated city like Manhattan, obviously. So depending on where you go, there's different needs and different attitudes. And
maybe the context is very important. Maybe in a rural state where there's lots of green grass and trees, people are more peaceful and less likely to fight. In a city, people are more irritable, more angry. They've actually done this experiment with rats, interesting enough, with if you have not too many rats in a cage, the rats are reasonably peaceful. If you put a whole lot of rats in a cage, they get very angry. So maybe the context is very important.
Yeah. And mind you, I'm for reasonable gun laws and licensing and control, but I've being a criminal defense investigator, the majority of my murder cases in Massachusetts involved people with knives and those one punch deals, concussion, you're dead. So people do commit murders, and if they want to kill someone, they're going to do that. Guns don't help. So
well, and that's true. And really, I think the average American feel somewhere in between the two of you. And what we really want to do is we want to get those AR-15 rifles out of the hands of crazy people, so you can't walk into a school one day having a bad day and kill 10 people.
Yeah.
You know, you could, but you're, you know, we've certainly just seen this in Canada where someone took a vehicle and ran over.
Right.
Killed 10 people with a vehicle. I mean, unfortunately, that's true. But
that does make sense.
You know, gun control, and the only reason I brought it up, and I don't want to digress there, but it really is one of those issues that really shows what the cultural divide is right now.
It's a hot topic.
It's a hot topic, and people are very divided between you shouldn't have a gun and you should have any kind of gun you want. So,
sure. I mean, I believe in self defense, and I'm going to add one thing to the mental health issue when it comes to gun licensing. Lana, being a mental health doctor, can address this or speak to this. I've heard about proposals of legislation where psychiatrists and mental health hospitals should submit all their records to the police firearms licensing authorities so they know who the patients that the doctors are treating, so they can deny them firearms. However, I know that a lot of Lana's, I don't want to get into who Lana's patients are, but obviously, but in general, psychiatrists often treat people who are on the front lines, including police, emergency workers. Right. So those are the people that need the most help, the most mental health assistance for therapy and everything. And those are the people that could potentially be denied guns, people that are protecting us. And psychiatrists also have, if they're aware that they have a police officer as their patient who's mentally disturbed, that may potentially go out and hurt someone with it, they're going to alert the authorities and have that person committed to a mental health hospital, and they don't want to be sued anyhow. So there's a mechanism already in place for that.
Having said that, it is well established that mental health professionals are not good at predicting things like suicide and probably homicide as well. So, yes, the mechanisms are in place, but, you know, human behavior is spontaneous and hard to predict.
Sure.
So,
well, they do have patterns.
Right. And you know what? When you hear it in the news, you know, it's always after the fact. So then we always piece the pieces together, right? We always say, oh, we should have known because his father did something, or we saw a tweet that he put out, or you know, he went on Facebook and railed against this group or that group. Well, in hindsight, you know, they say hindsight's 20/20. So in hindsight, we can figure all these things out. But I think you're right, Lana. I think that prior to prior to something happening, an incident, it's really hard to piece those things together. And I think that there are certainly great privacy issues that David brings up, you know, with law enforcement and you know, first responders, firefighters, people that are in the front lines, there's certainly privacy issues that I think, you know, just having doctors turn over their records, I think that would be, you know, that's a little shooting beyond the mark. That's overkill. No bad pun intended.
Sure.
But you know, so I think they'll have to come up with a better solution than that. But I think stricter licensing requirements would really help. You know,
look, I'm wondering, in the time that we have left, I'm wondering whether we could just briefly touch upon a very big and very controversial topic, and that is the topic of walls and refugees and boundaries. Yeah. Now, I know that you mentioned about walls, and you know, you, obviously your personal feelings are that boundaries shouldn't be there. And I know America has been built on you know, on lots of foreigners, and so has Australia. Mm-hmm. I'm also aware of the fact that you're going to be in Portugal soon, and what I have read recently is that Europe is completely overrun by refugees to mm-hmm. the extent that things are completely breaking down. This is a very contentious issue because we, as a humanitarian, I think everyone has the right to be and live in a peaceful place. Mm. And global citizenship is something that I aspire to, you know, would love to see happen in the world. On the other hand, I do realize boundaries can be important, and I do realize that you know, depending on where the refugees are from, who they are, how traumatized they are, this can really upset the stability of a country. As a woman, I have been incredibly concerned to hear that in some countries, including Sweden, that the level of rape has increased by about 600%. This is a very difficult issue, and I don't know whether, given that you're going to be in Europe, this may well come up, the huge refugee crisis
Europe. We feel very empathic for the refugees, and if you saw them and said, sorry, you can't come into our country, I mean, you'd feel bad for these people, but at the same time, it's a big deal. You need to plan and for people like this to come into your country.
And for a country to be able to function, just like you need to be able to function as a household, you do need to have some restrictions in order to keep a culture stable. Mm. What are your thoughts on that, Senator?
Well, you know, first of all, I think that's a fear that we have in America, that we look at what's going on in Europe and we fear that's happening in America as well. We see border towns, for example, we've had mayors of border towns on my show, and you know, some of the conditions that they talk about are just deplorable. I mean, they're just horrible, and I think America fears that. So that's the first thing. It's a big fear, which is leading to you know, radical solutions like building a wall. Imagine building a wall around America. It's my recollection that America and Australia are close in size. America is a pretty big country. I don't know how you build a, you know, a 10,000 mile wall around it, but
I guess the other thing is people can fly in, you know.
Climb over the wall or build a tunnel, which they're willing to do. But it just shows you that's almost a hysterical solution, isn't it? And that's because this issue is starting to generate hysteria in America. And I think, you know, but again, I think the solutions are more bringing the world together than trying to keep the world apart. You know, nobody says, you know, we act in America like all the people that settled our country were rich Europeans that just wanted an adventure or something. You know, like they said, oh, you know what, we don't like Ireland or Italy or, you know, Germany or wherever they were from. Let's just move to America. The truth is that we're a country of refugees, and this is and this is the way it's always been in the world. And the way to ultimately solve the problem, I think, is to make the world a stable place so people want to stay. They don't want to leave. And that's a matter of bringing people together. But I understand in Europe that we have increased racial tensions in all these countries that or many countries. And when you talk about the increase in rape in Sweden, I think you're back to the analogy you made with the rats. The more people you put in, the more violence happens. And unfortunately, women always seem to be at the front line of domestic violence anyway. So I think the world needs to come together and deal with this problem. I think, I lived in a bad neighborhood, grew up in a bad neighborhood, and I've been involved in two crimes on Capitol Hill in a relatively nice neighborhood, which resulted in the arrest of two sets of perpetrators. One broke into our apartment building and another caused a crime on the street, both of which I reported, and they resulted in arrest. And the police officer said to me, well, you're a really stand-up citizen, blah, blah, blah. And I said, this is how I was trained by my grandmother. If you saw something, you said something, you went to somebody. And they said, well, she was a really great neighbor. And I said, no, she wasn't a really great neighbor. She was looking out for herself because she knows if your neighbor's house gets robbed and you don't say anything, they'll be back next week to rob your house. And that was their attitude. And I think we have to say this about the world. We have to say, look, maybe the problem's in Europe right now. Maybe the problem's in Asia or somewhere else. But sooner or later, if you don't resolve the problem's coming to you. And yes, I think we need to come together, and say we all need to get involved in what's going on in these countries like Syria, where people are leaving as quickly as they can.
Yep, and that's the point of this show. We try to address the global issues. These things are a global concern. We're a global society. We're a global community. We're all dependent on each other economically and in so many different ways. And so all of these issues, wherever they are in the world, are
our concern.
And impact and affect everyone in some way.
Well, and when you talk about this solid support that the president has of people that are paranoid and worried in the United States, this is the oldest political ruse in American politics, that we say, look, you're not the problem. You know what the problem is? The problem are these people sneaking across the border, or the problem are these rotten politicians, or the problem are, that's something that's always used in politics when people are scared. I say that the truth, the best and worst thing about democracy are exactly the same thing. And that is that it represents the people. So when our country starts to go down the path, for example, of wanting to close off all the borders, we need to look beyond the politicians and look at the people that actually are generating the policies, and when I say generating the policies, I mean complaining, pressuring politicians to do these sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, we're all in the same boat. So if the boat's sinking, it's in our interest to work together and figure out where to plug the holes.
Right. And you're talking to an old sailor, and there's also an adage that all boats rise in a high tide. All boats come up together as well as go down together. So we need to keep that in mind.
Very true.
Good.
Very, very true. Yeah. We're all living in the same world.
Very wise.
And the world suddenly seems to be getting closer and closer together, you know, with technology and everything.
Hey, I believe all the solutions are available. Most of the solutions are available for us, and we just need to start putting them into practice.
Yeah. And you know what? If you doubt that we all live in one world, look at climate change. You know, this is a thing in America that we're just coming to grips with, you know, that 20 years ago we had politicians saying, oh, you know, there's no such thing as global warming. It's a matter of the earth going through different cycles and this happens, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? Now we go out and it's 80 degrees on Thursday. And a week later, not even a week, 3 days later, it's snowing. So we all understand that global warming is a problem, that climate change is a problem. And that's a problem that nobody can solve on their own. No single country can solve that. We need to come together to do that.
We do. And the bottom line on that is it doesn't matter whether the earth is going through changes or it's caused by carbon or one thing or another. If it's happening, it's a problem and we need to deal with it, period. Yep. No matter what the cause of it is.
That's right.
We just need to agree that it's a problem. And I believe there are some solutions to it. And we just need to look at those things and do the best we can.
Work together with love and harmony. And
for the best, for the interest of all, for everyone, because we're all interested in this.
And you never know where the solutions lie, do you? You know, we had a great problem with deforestation half a generation ago, 20 years ago. Not as much of a problem today. And why is that? Because somebody invented the internet. So we don't push as much paper as we used to push. Right. So, you know, you never know where the solutions are going to lie. And when you bring people together to find solutions, I not only think you get better solutions, but you make people vested in the solution.
The mass mind is amazing.
Oh, I love it. Brainstorming together. And that's what we're going to be doing very soon in Portugal. So look, thank you very much for coming on our show. All the best with your tour to Europe. And thank you everyone for listening to Universal Soul Love. Love you all. And catch you next time.
Thank you very much for being on our show, Senator Michael.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.